Mini episode 666 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the FDH Lounge. Rick Morris and Kyle Ross are here, your favorite football talkers anywhere, and it is probably not a coincidence. The week 17 of the NFL season coincides with mini episode number 666, because that's basically about how evil it is to try to get a handle on what we got going on with the games. Kyle, I know you're enjoying that already. We got a tough slate.
That was one of your better jokes, I think.
Yeah, doesn't say much, but still, yeah, that's what we got to look forward to here. I was 8-8 last week on my plays, 0-3 on my big three, 0-1 on my lock for the year, 127, 108-5 on all the plays, 24-24 on my big three, 7-9 on my locks. But what that means is I only need a 5-11 this week to stay above 52.4% for the season. Truly a big fluke, but you know what? One that I will take to my grave joyously if I can do that, if I can be profitable on all the games this year. But eking out a 5-11 on this card looks like it's going to be a nail-biter. This looks like a brutal card. Having said that, the most intimidating cards this year, I haven't been good at sizing up how hard or easy a card is going to be. So that's the only thing that makes me feel any better, is that the ones that I think have been hard have gone easier for me, and the ones where I thought I was going to nail it have been where I've gotten killed. So hopefully that continues. You, Kyle, I believe we're 3-1 last week, bringing you to 50-40-2. Very profitable for the year.
Yes, 3-1. And I believe, no, I only had one favorite that won. I could have been 4-0, but, you know, your Miami Dolphins, Coach Dan Campbell, what a beaut and a half he is. Kicking field goals when he's down. Ryan Tannehill throwing interceptions. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Miami. Let me know. But, you know, and you know what's interesting about last week is I believe they were all 1 o'clock games that I had last week, if I remember right. The Browns.
Yep.
Atlanta was a winner, and then Buffalo. Yeah, so it was all 1 o'clock games. And when Sunday was all said and done, I really wished I had given out more games because, as you know, or as you, I'm sure, surmised at some point on Sunday, it was not a good day for the public at all. They were whitewashed in a manner that was not nice, quite frankly, by the fine folks offshore and in Las Vegas. So with, you know, the Jets beating the Patriots outright, the Ravens beating the Steelers, the Rams beating the Seahawks, it was pretty ugly for the general public last week. And I got cold feet on some of those games. I mean, I know it's easy to say after the fact, but really I should have given out the Ravens, at least. The Rams I had cold feet on because they'd given up 500 yards to Tampa Bay the previous week. So I was a little leery on them. But the Ravens, I was like, well, you know, we don't even know who their quarterback is. They may have given up, but Pittsburgh sure picked a awful time to deliver its annual lay an egg on the road, as they seem to do every year under Mike Tomlin, quite frankly. And now they're in a lot of trouble.
I'll tell you what, point of commonality, but them laying an egg late last year, it was at home, first week of the playoffs, but also against Baltimore. So they seem to have a problem getting up for Baltimore. They looked flat against them.
Well, yes. Well, don't forget two of Baltimore's wins this year. Two of Baltimore's wins this year are against Pittsburgh. They beat them when they had Mike Vick on a Thursday night game. I think I'm going to do something real dumb at the end of that game. I forgot. But it was a Thursday night game, and I remember that the announcers were even talking about, well, what a nice Pittsburgh win, and then they did something foolish that escapes me at the time. It's quite frankly, Ricky, I'll be honest with you, as we sit here and do this, I'm just wishing it was 2016 already because these bowl games are kicking my ass. So week 17 is something I haven't I'll be very honest with the listeners here, I haven't spent a ton of time doing, so we're going to kind of go with these on the fly, I think, my picks. I have glanced at the games, obviously, you know, more than a glance, and I kind of have a general idea what I'm going to do, but, yeah, it's ugly. People should realize two things
sure.
about this week's card. One is, some of these games, it's almost like handicapping a preseason game in that you don't
right.
know who's going to play. If my advice always is, if you have two teams that have nothing to play for, I would stay away from those games.
Okay.
I know I am here. And then you're always going to get the inflated lines to teams that, quote-unquote, must win. You know, the Jets, obviously, is an example of that this week. All of a sudden, they find themselves in a control-their-own-destiny situation against Buffalo. So it's interesting. You've got kind of just dead lines, and you've got numbers that have been way over-adjusted to reflect the fact the public is obviously going to bet on the teams that, quote-unquote, must win. But as you know, must win does not necessarily equate to will win.
Well, that's true. And listen, I'm going to probably struggle to kind of have something coherent to say about a lot of these games this week because they're so difficult. So when you're looking at trying to fit in 16 games into our window with a 6 to 7 minute premise, perhaps you and I are best served with bullet points anyways. So we start off here on Sunday. It's the 12-3 Pats at the 5-10 Dolphins. 1 o'clock Eastern Time, Sun Life Stadium, Miami Gardens, Florida on CBS. Kevin Harlan, Rich Gannon have been sentenced to watch this game. The Dolphins are getting 10 points in this one, up from 9 initially. And a lot of these ones, again, like you said, the inflated spreads last week of the season, who's got their book of stamps out to mail it in, who doesn't. That's a real rearview mirror thing. We don't know for sure which teams are going to mail it in this week. Having said that, I'm just going to defer to a couple of things that I know to be true in games like this. You've thrown this stat out there in the last month of the season, double-digit home dogs, whatever.
Oh.
I'm going to be on the Dolphins. Coach Dan Campbell, he looks like a coach. This may be his last chance to look like a head coach, at least in Miami. But I'm going to take the fish using your theory because I got nothing else to go on here.
Yeah, I'm taking Miami. I'm actually going to recommend them. They are available, Rick Morris. Mark me down. I don't make these lines up, but come on, listeners, check your screen. They're currently plus 11.5 at 5 dimes. And
ooh.
I'm taking them. Obviously, we need to go over the fact that New England needs to win this game to secure home field advantage in the AFC. And they will win. We also should mention that I don't know if Miami is sure who they're starting at quarterback this week. I'm showing an undecided
right.
here on my screen. That being said, New England is going to get out ahead comfortably and then get backdoored is what I see happening. Miami
yep.
not only falls into the double-digit home dog scenario, but they've failed to cover, what, like 6 of the last 7 games now or 7 of the last
right.
8? You know, typically when you see something like that, it's a good buy-low situation. Dan Campbell ain't going to be around next year. Fortunately, it looks like Ryan Tannehill will. They're kind of stuck with him. I was wrong about that. But nevertheless, the Dolphins will get the cash here. They've actually failed to cover 6 straight games as I look right now at their results. But
okay.
They'll get an ugly cover here in week 17.
All right. Well, we got an ugly game here, whether it be the elements being a part of it on Sunday or not. Two teams that kind of fallen from grace. It's the 6-9 Lions at the 6-9 Bears. 1 o'clock Eastern time from Soldier Field in Chicago on Fox. Joe Davis, Brady Quinn, Molly McGrath on the call, and this is one that has, at this point in time, as I'm scanning here, this has devolved to a pick'em. It had been Chicago minus 1.5 at the open. This is one where, again, I there's not much to separate these teams as far as what's the motivation of both of them, which is a big unknowable at this point. A lot that I just kind of bounced back and forth on. I go back to at the end here. The Bears have only won one game at home this year. I think you talked about how their record against the spread for a while has been one where they've been kind of due to bounce back a little bit more. So on the whole thing of the Bears being a little bit more due to show something than the Lions, who have been relatively hot recently, I'll go with the Bears to finish stronger.
If I was forced to make a pick on this game, I would completely agree with what you just said. But this is one of those ones where you know, there's nothing to play for on either side. Both these teams' season is done. I guess the Bears can push on their season win total of 7 or go over. You know, that one did go down to 6.5. So if anyone has an over Chicago win ticket, I guess you're probably the only one who cares about this game. But I'm passing. I'll say this. I'm not playing any of these games where neither team has any playoff aspirations.
Don't blame you. Neither one of them does. And, again, I keep saying that's the big unknowable. It's going to be a rear-view mirror thing. We'll know Monday who are the teams who mailed it in the worst time. There is a disconcerting similarity between Week 17 games and some of the preseason games because you just don't know what you're getting, even more than usual. It's the 6-9 Saints at the 8-7 Falcons, 1 o'clock Eastern time from the Georgia Dome in Atlanta on Sunday on Fox. Sam Rosen, past lounge guest, along with Matt Millen and Peter Schrager on the call. And in this game, Atlanta is laying a steady 4 points to the Saints. It's been right about there all week. Again, when you look at what to play for, not a whole lot. Falcons can at least salvage, believe it or not, a winning record out of this year, which would be a donut hole akin to what Carolina did last year. They didn't have a winning record, but they had the same amount of futility in the middle with strength on both ends of the season. This was actually a borderline one for me for my big three. I'm not going with it, but I like the Falcons. I think they're going to finish strong. I think they're going to be able to take advantage of what the Saints have in terms of the extreme weakness defensively. It looked like, albeit way too late in the game, but it looked like the Atlanta passing game and offense was kind of coming back next week or last week. I think they keep it going 2 weeks in a row. I like them to roll over the Saints and get revenge for that loss early on that started to kind of unravel them.
This line definitely looks low. New Orleans is a bottom kind of 5 team, I think, in most power rankings. Maybe they're just in the outskirts of bottom 5. I think Atlanta's kind of middle of the road. So laying only 4 at home certainly seems low. You remember, Atlanta was actually a road favorite in New Orleans when they lost outright that game you just referenced. But here's where you have to be leery about laying points with Atlanta. You got to wonder if there's a bit of a letdown factor coming off the huge win over Carolina last week. That was, you know, kind of the apex of their season. I know they started 5-0, but that's a distant memory. Really, I think, you know, their season highlight was that win over Carolina. And you kind of wonder maybe how they come out the following week. Again, nothing to play for. So, not interested.
Yeah, don't blame you. Like I said, I left that outside of my big three, probably for some of the reasons you're citing. Another divisional game this week, just like I think all of them, actually. It's the 5-10 Ravens. Yeah, at the 11-4 Bengals, 1 o'clock Eastern time, Paul Brown Stadium in the Natty on Fox. Tom Brenneman, Charles Davis, Tony Siragusa. This is one that got, and I think this happened with another game, too, that got flexed to Fox from CBS this week. I don't know what the mechanism is for that, for how they pick the games, but this one moving to the other network. This is one where the Natty is now weighing 9 up from 7 initially, and still don't know at this point in time, or unless it moved up to 9 on the knowledge that McCarron is definitely going to be going. But
He's listed as probable. He's listed as
probable. Oh, probable. Okay. Okay. All right. And again, he got off to a pretty good start against a great defense against Denver. Certainly better than I thought he was going to, but you look at the production that the Ravens have been getting offensively the last couple of weeks here, and again, Bengals with a backup quarterback. I see them being a possibility to get backdoored. I don't think they're going to get done altogether like the Steelers did last week, if for no other reason than the Bengals are going to be on alert for something like that, but the thought that they're going to kind of blow them out at this point in time, they're not a team that really has a lot in the way of momentum. They're kind of limping into the playoffs here, not least of which because some of the bad injuries they've suffered on offense recently. Let's not forget Tyler Eifert being a part of that as well, because he was such a part of the offensive breakout earlier this year. I just don't think the Bengals can cover the 9, so I'm going to be on the Ravens.
Yeah, they need to win here and then hope Denver loses to get a bye. And they really could use a bye, because if they get to the bye, you know, then maybe Andy Dalton will be ready to go for the first playoff game. That's kind of a wishful thinking, though, because Denver's playing San Diego.
That's right.
Later on in the day. So, and Denver's at home. So, looking like the Bengals are going to be the 3 seed. I actually don't think this number is inflated compared to some of the other ones. Baltimore, you know, shocked everybody last week when they beat Pittsburgh. They'll lose here, but I'm not interested in playing this one. You're probably right with taking the points just because, you know, with A.J. McCarron, you know, getting hurt on that last play, Cincinnati's obviously got to be very weary of sustaining any more injuries going into the playoffs when they're going to play a very good team, either Pittsburgh or the Jets most likely. So, you know, Cincinnati's not going to be interested in blowing out. This is simply a matter of winning and staying healthy. So not going to play this one either.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, theoretically the Bengals remain alive, but I think they know that they left their chance for the two seed on the field in Denver last week. That's asking for an awful lot for Denver to lose that game. Up next, the 9-6 Steelers at the 3-12 Browns, 1 o'clock Sunday from I still call it Cleveland Browns Stadium in Cleveland on CBS. Greg Dumble, Trent Green, Jamie Erdahl on the call, and this is one where the Steelers are laying a solid 10 points in this game. Late word that good old Johnny Clipboard may not be playing because of the NFL concussion protocol. Austin Davis to go back out there. I'm going to be, counterintuitively, on the Browns. Here's why. Because even at 10 points, this seems too easy. We've seen this play out multiple times, and the stadium's going to get taken over by all those stupid a-holes with their urine-covered towels on Sunday, and it's going to be a field day for all of their jerk-off fans, the fifth column in Northeast Ohio. It just seems way too easy, doesn't it, to say 38-0, it's over. Because we've seen this. We've seen this story play out, and I'm just too weary of anything that seems too easy to assume. On paper, there's no reason to believe that the Browns aren't going to get completely housed here, aside from the fact that they've played marginally better in December than in some of their previous putrid months, and that maybe the worst of the underachievement with the front seven may be behind them. I think that's a big assumption to make. So I'm basically just going on the it's too easy premise, and I'm going the other way. Not exactly a why ask why, because it's not the same reasoning. But when everything in my gut is telling me, you know, Steelers by 50, I don't trust my gut to that extent. So give me the Browns.
This is an inflated number because Pittsburgh has to win, and they also need the Jets to lose in order to make the playoffs. So you're, believe it or not, getting value on the Browns here. Now, I'm not a big fan of Johnny Manziel. By the way, Jason Jones, our boy, love him. And I'll tip my cap. He was absolutely right about Ryan Tannehill when he ripped him. But this shameful bit of, oh, what is this conspiracy theory going on with Johnny Manziel? Stop that, Jason. Are you listening? Stop that right now. You need to investigate the guy for dwarfism, as far as I'm concerned. Not forget about the concussion protocol. This guy stinks, Johnny Manziel. Did you watch?
Yep.
I mean, they covered for me last week, and it was great. I don't know if this guy knows how to go through his progressions. And he's an NFL quarterback, Rick Morris. That's not good. So if they do have to go to Austin Davis, I don't think it's that bad of a downgrade. Sure enough, the spread was, what was the spread the first time these teams met? 1-10. Hold on here, line. Let me take a look. It was only 6.5. It was 6.5.
Really?
The Browns were only getting 6.5 in Pittsburgh earlier this year.
Okay. Wow.
Now, that was the game, remember, Roethlisberger came on in relief and Dan Fouts kept making, oh, he's the greatest backup quarterback I've ever seen. That sucked, too, speaking of things that pissed me off. But I got one for you, Rick. You want to hang your hat on something?
Yeah.
Now, remember that trend I told you last week about teams that are double-digit dogs 2 weeks in a row covering 67% of the time over the last decade? Browns are all over that right now.
Yep.
And Browns, they fall into it again this week. And Pittsburgh, with last week's outright loss since 2008, is now 0-9 against the spread when being asked to lay more than a touchdown away from home. I'm on the Browns. Recommendation, second ugly one this week.
Wow, okay. All right. And they don't come any uglier than that one. But, yeah, you're right. FDH senior editor Jason Jones has been regrettably in the tank for Johnny Manziel. from day one. I insisted loudly all along, correctly, that the Browns should have drafted Teddy Bridgewater, and I have been screaming for months. People are now getting on my new bandwagon, though. People are now jumping on my turn your head and cough for Jared Goff bandwagon. I think people are seeing exactly why I was saying that in the first place. So brighter days perhaps ahead for the Browns if they heed my recommendation, which, of course, they never
do. The Browns don't dare try to win this game, though. Because, I mean, with Tennessee picking first, you know Tennessee is not going to pick a quarterback. So
right.
The Browns do get the second spot. They get their choice of quarterback, assuming that's the position they address. And I'm not 100% convinced they should do that. They probably should. I mean, Johnny Manziel does look pretty inept. And Jared Goff looked really good yesterday in the Armed Forces Bowl. So, yeah, you probably do that. So the Browns don't dare win this game, but I think they'll keep it close. Pittsburgh's going to be pretty tense, given the situation.
That's right. Another game here, one of many where teams don't have a lot to play for, largely because I think it's a foregone conclusion that Houston has won the South. It's the 5-10 Jaguars at the 8-7 Texans, 1 o'clock Eastern Time, NRG Stadium in Houston on CBS Sunday. Spiro Dita, Solomon Wilcox on the call, and Houston is laying 6 in this one, up from 5.5. Initially, this is one where, again, I wanted to try to make a case for Jacksonville to kind of come in the back door here. But as much as, again, I think it's a foregone conclusion Houston's taking the South at this point, somehow or other, Indy needs like 9 things to happen. I don't exactly understand how that could be possible. But them winning their own game is going to be enough of an uphill struggle. We'll get to that a little bit later. But I just really can't make a case for it. You look at what happened earlier in the season and the amount of pressure that Blake Bortles was getting from the front seven. I just don't think he's going to have time enough to be able to get it to the dual Allens. And I think Houston gets a good win with some momentum going into the playoffs. I'll take them reluctantly laying the 6 here.
I'm recommending Jacksonville.
Okay.
This is one that came to me on an afternoon jog just before the program, Rick Morris.
Okay.
As I was scrambling through my head on games this week, what was I going to pick? Houston's off a really lopsided win last week over Tennessee. Ooh, Tennessee's not very good, by the way, Ricky. I think you were right about that. Jacksonville, a team that got a lot of support last week, I think including from yourself, against New Orleans,
yeah.
And they fell flat. They couldn't stop the Saints' offense there in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome.
Right.
But Houston's quarterback situation remains very dicey. It looks like Brian Hoyer's going to start, I guess. But I don't know about laying this many points with Houston. Stranger things have happened. I have no scientific proof that this can happen. Well, obviously I don't have any scientific proof, but I have no trends. I have nothing to back this up. Call it a gut feeling, which I rarely do. I'll go with the Jaguars plus the points here.
Interesting.
I think Houston may have some complacency based on what you said, and I think that because it's such a formality that they're going to the South, what if they look at the scoreboard and the Colts are losing their game? Then they just start pulling people. So I think the Jags can certainly get in through the back door here. Jacksonville has kind of underperformed the last couple weeks, so I think they're due for kind of a good game.
Could be. And by the way, since the Texans have an apparent fetish for Browns quarterback leftovers, backup wastoids like Hoyer and Whedon, may I suggest to them that they instead look in the direction of Dr. David Mays? You know, if you're gonna go for sloppy, backup kind of a pick, go old school. Put a little bit of flair into it. Be imaginative for once in your life, Bill O'Brien. But Texans.
Hey, it's an interesting
game here.
You ought to say something nice about Bill O'Brien. You ripped him all year, and he's going to have his team win a division, albeit a very crappy division. But with these quarterbacks to win a division when everyone left his team for dead, again, when Houston gets himself a real quarterback via the draft or free agency next year, which you have to imagine they will, this team could be pretty good for the next couple of years, man.
He's also the moron who thought that he could, go far into the playoffs with these quarterbacks in the first place. I'm not going to. That's like the kid that kills his parents and pleads for leniency as an orphan, okay? Bill O'Brien
really
is the reason that these quarterbacks blow. All right? He could have had better quarterbacks and didn't
who
want it.
Who could he have had?
They could have made a move in the draft.
Door?
They could have tried to make a move in the draft.
Well, because I'm sure
didn't they have Ryan Fitzpatrick previously and didn't think he could get it done?
Yeah, that one did well. You know, he did well with him. Yeah, that doesn't look so good letting him go. But hey,
how about that?
They're in the playoffs.
Yeah, exactly.
They're in the playoffs.
Yeah.
They're in the playoffs.
Yeah. I don't need Ryan Fitzpatrick because I have Brian Hoyer. What an idiot.
Well,
I'm not going to give him credit because he won a crappy division. Go with Brian Flores.
He thought he had your boy, Ryan Mallett, who you think is so good. And, oh, by the way, I like Bill O'Brien. You know why I like Bill O'Brien? Because he told off those stupid Paterno people in Penn State. My hat's off to Bill O'Brien. A fantastic coach and a fantastic man.
I'll give him credit to that. All the Sandusky supporters there in Happy Valley, I'll give him credit for that. Up next, the 3-12 Titans at the 7-8 Colts. 1 o'clock Eastern Time, Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis on CBS. Andrew Catalan's Tasker, Steve Berline on the call. And this is one where the Colts are laying 3 points to Tennessee. I look at this game here again. You talk about the possibility of a foregone conclusion that Houston wins the South. The Colts are one of these teams, again, you know, stayed alive last week. However thinly that was, and as you said, that might have been more Miami kind of giving it to them. You've been saying all year that the Colts are markedly worse than their one-loss record. I'm going to shock you here. I'm on the Titans, and I think they could win outright. I think even the Titans, who I think are one of the most untalented teams in the league, I think even they may have a little more fight to them than the Colts and their 99th string quarterback this week here. Colts to quite possibly to lose, but not to cover the 3. How about them apples?
I don't know. Who is playing quarterback for Indianapolis? Because isn't Charlie Whitehurst hurt?
He is hurt. Is it the Colts that are going with Stephen Morris? I don't even know which crappy team at this point is. Stephen Morris, apparently. Cousin Steve.
Oh, boy. Here's the only reason why you can't take Tennessee in this situation. They have to lose they have to lose this game on purpose. They're in line to get the number one pick.
Yep.
They can't try. And also, Zach Mettenberger hasn't won a game like ever. So I don't want to back him either. By the way, the Colts were actually, even in victory, were outgained again last week. They have now been outgained in 14 of 15 games. No team is worse when it comes to winning the total yardage on a weekly basis than the Colts.
I'm going to make a counterpoint. I got a counterpoint to that, and that is, you talk about how a coach or in baseball, a manager is sometimes at cross purposes with the long-term needs of the organization. Mike Munchak's gone, okay?
You mean
One more win on his resume, okay? That's something he could use, is one more win on his resume. He's going to be coaching to win, and he's the guy controlling the buttons.
Well, what if the players start sabotaging it?
Why would they do that?
I don't know.
Okay. You had me going there for a second.
I didn't really think they were. Yes, I didn't. I'm not suggesting that he's going to call a pass play and Zach Mettenberger is going to turn around and throw the ball 30 yards the other way. I don't think that. Although it would amuse me. I'll say this.
Yeah.
Tennessee, again, though, going back to the Browns, when we talked about the Browns, the one unique thing with Tennessee is that they aren't going to pick a quarterback in the draft.
Okay.
We know that because they picked Mariota.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I guess they don't know the Browns are. No, I just refuse to. The Tampa Bay last year, remember?
Right.
They were in a similar spot where they needed to lose to keep the number one pick. They tanked so badly in that game. I anticipate Tennessee kind of doing the same here.
Okay. Listen, we got to go short shrift on most of these meaningless games here the rest of the way. We got a lot of them left here. 8-7 Skins at the 4-11 Cowboys. 1 o'clock on Fox Eastern Time. Myers, Barber, and Pass Lounge Guest Jennifer Hale on the call. Washington is in this game getting 3 points, or is it 3.5? I can never find it when I'm scanning for it, desperately scanning with my eyes, desperately scanning. 3.5, out from 3.
It's 3.5, yeah.
I'm on the Skins. It's a borderline pick for me because I think even with pulling a lot of the players, I think, again, but here's the thing. Their defense, it's always the offense in the skill position more affected by this. It's the defense and Dallas's inability to score points on them that the Skins are going to be trotting out there. So I like them to cover, and I definitely like them to win.
Why would you play this game? It's a preseason game, man. I mean, who the hell's even playing in this game? I don't know who the quarterbacks for either side is going to be. So, next.
Good point. All right, boy, talk about two teams mailing it in. The 6-9 Eagles, now minus that a-hole Chip Kelly, versus the 6-9 Giants.
Oh, we got to talk about that.
1 o'clock Eastern Time, MetLife Stadium, East Rutherford, New Jersey on Fox. Five-time lounge guest Kenny Albert, Daryl Moose Johnson, the lovely Tanwara Oakman on the call for Fox. This is one where the Giants are laying 3, down from 3.5. I like the Giants in a game here to kind of bounce back strongly, finish strong with Beckham. Eagles will be coming out strong now that they're not carrying the albatross of their milkshake pushing.
You're so wrong. You are so wrong. Are you on Howie Roseman's payroll, by the way, the way you were acting on Twitter? Are you on this guy's payroll? What
Howie
do you
Roseman's
do so
not
good?
A smart guy either. Well, Howie Roseman's not the answer either. He shouldn't be in charge of picking a new coach.
Let me tell you something. Chip Kelly, the GM, is very bad. Okay, he did a really bad job. Like, he significantly downgraded his own roster. But he's a good coach, okay? And it made no sense to fire the guy, especially when you're going to trot out Pat Shurmur leading the troops in Week 17. That's something you really want, Pat Shurmur.
I'll end the game with this here before we move to the next one. You know who Chip Kelly is? As Chip Kelly is Facebook GM as GM. I think even you'd agree with that.
Yeah, he did not. I mean, he deserved to have the personnel decisions taken away. He did a really lousy job, but he won 10 games the first 2 years here. I thought it was the knee-jerk reaction, and I'm going to tell you something. I think the Eagles are going to stink next year, partly because of Chip Kelly's poor moves as the general manager, but
they're
going to stink next year. They're going to stink
next year. He left them with a bad roster. Speaking of teams with bad rosters, it's the 7-8 Rams at the 4-11 49ers, 4:25 Eastern Time, Levi's Stadium in Santa Clara on CBS. Tom McCarthy, Adam Archuleta on the call. Wait a minute, cross-pollination here. CBS has got this one. Fox has got some AFC. I don't know what the hell's going on here. This is weird. But anyways, the line for this game, my eyes do this to me every week. I'm scanning. It is
3.5.
St. Louis is laying 3.5 on the road here. Look, the cliche is the Rams never follow up a good performance with a good performance. And as you said, the 49ers have been much tougher there. I'm not going to go with cliches. It's Week 17. I don't know that any cliches apply here. I'll reluctantly go with the Rams for two good performances in a row. Rams to finish at 800, which is Jeff Fisher's ultimate – or I'm sorry, 500, which is Jeff Fisher's ultimate comfort zone. Give me the Rams laying a 3.5 here.
I'll tell you what, Chip Kelly did a lot more Nick Foles than, you know, your other Republican buddy, Joe Linway's boy, Jeff Fisher, did with him this year. I was tempted to take the Niners here because they are a lot better at home. The numbers bear that out. But, again, no thanks. Two teams, nothing to play for.
Don't blame you. It's the 7-8 Raiders. Oh, wait a minute. That's one of my big three. Skipping ahead here. All right. 6-9 Bucks at the 14-1 Panthers, 4:25 Eastern Stadium from Obama bailed out Bank of America Stadium in Charlotte on Fox. Dick Stockton, David Deal, and Christina Pink on the call. And Carolina is laying 10 points in this one, down from 10.5 initially. The Bucks screwed me last week. They've been kind of on the downslide the last couple of weeks here, but methinks that what we saw from the Panthers, methinks they're not done cresting off of that 14-0 yet. They're not going to lose this game. There's too much at stake, and they're actually going to be trying because there is something at stake here. But talking about a good team with a chance to get backdoored, I see it here. Give me the Bucks getting the 10 points.
Agreed. This is a recommendation for me. It's the same thing as New England-Miami. And keep this in mind, Ricky. Remember there were six teams that started 5-0? Remember that all the way back when? They've all now lost, with Carolina losing last week. The other five before Carolina have all lost the next game after their first loss.
Ooh, okay.
So
interesting.
I'm taking the points with Tampa Bay here. Carolina will not lose because of what's on the line. All they need is to get a comfortable straight-up win. Tampa Bay, God, what happened to them the last 3 weeks, huh? I think they'll show some pride here.
Yeah, they've fallen apart, but it's their last chance. Finish with 7 wins. That's a strong season for them based on where they've come from. The 4-11 Chargers at the 11-4 Broncos,
4:25 Eastern Time from Mile High on CBS. Jim Natsville, Sims, Tracy Wolfson on the call. And this is one where Denver is laying 9 up from 7.5 initially. A stat courtesy of USA Today Sports Weekly. Average number of points that the Chargers have allowed in their last 4 games, 16 points. I got this as about a 20-13 game. The Bronco offense has not been overwhelming this year, no matter who the quarterback, outside of a few limited stretches here and there. I see the Chargers mustering up not many points, but enough to get inside of this. I think they're going to keep it close as far as covering goes, but I think at the end they sneak inside. Give me the Chargers to, a team that's really broken my heart on picking them this year, but I think they get inside the 9.
I'm absolutely not playing this game. I will tell you this, though, Ricky, you'll be overjoyed to hear this when we do the season wrap-up and then look ahead to 2016. San Diego is a lock to be my most improved team in the league next year. A lock.
I agree with that. I think I was just a year early on them. It's the 9-6 Seahawks at the 13-2 Cardinals, 4:25 Eastern Time. University of Phoenix Stadium, Glendale on Fox. Joe Buck, Troy Aikman, Aaron Andrews, the Fox A-team on the call here for a game that doesn't necessarily have a lot at stake. Arizona is laying 6.5 up from 3.5 initially. Again, you have to believe Carolina's going to lose to Tampa Bay at home, no less, in order for this game to count for anything. Could happen, as we've indicated, but it's happening a lot. You talked about teams being kind of having inflated numbers because they're in a must-win situation this week. I'm going to add to this the whole thing of, I've been using the peak oil analogy a couple of times this year. I think we're at peak Cardinals right about now. What, they're going to take another one of the best teams in the NFC and just slap them around and beat the crap out of them the same way they've done the Packers and other teams the last couple of weeks? I don't see it. I think it's going to be a close one. Don't even rule out that the Seahawks can win, although I question how much they're going to be really strongly going for it here, given their own situation. But give me the Seahawks to cover.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm recommending them. It's a case of a team off kind of an embarrassing outright loss, a team that won a high-profile, for most of the country, TV game last week against Green Bay, an impressive match. I'll tell you this, Arizona is my number one team in the league right now going into the playoffs. There's no doubt about it in my mind.
This
team has a point differential above plus 200. Not many teams in history can claim that. We'll talk more about that when we get to the playoffs, and we're running low on time. But look, Arizona could look at the scoreboard. I know the Carolina-Tampa Bay game was moved to 4 o'clock in that window so that there was no kind of funny business here, perhaps. The league always trying to maintain that integrity. But if Arizona looks up at the scoreboard and does see Carolina way ahead of Tampa Bay, well, then they're pulling Carson Palmer immediately. And to be honest with you, given that the small likelihood of Tampa Bay actually beating Carolina, I don't even know if I'd play Carson Palmer here if I'm Seattle.
Well, yeah.
For Arizona,
yeah,
I'm Arizona.
Oh, exactly. And against the physical Seattle defense, no less,
yes.
I agree with you.
Yes.
On to my big three. I got to sweep these to be profitable for the year. I'm 24-24. So I got to hit all three. We start with the 10-5 Jets at the 7-8 Bills, 1 o'clock Eastern Time, Ralph Wilson Stadium, Orchard Park, New York on CBS. Cast Lounge guest Ian Eagle along with Dan Fouts and Evan Washburn on the call. Jets are laying 3 in this one, up from 1.5. Good old road favorite, Ricky. I got to end the year in style. I'm taking the Jets. I'm taking at least one road favorite this week here. They need this game, and they're going to get this game. I think that Buffalo's secondary is pretty exploitable, and I think the Jets have a lot to play for in terms of additional motivation here, not just Buddy Ryan, but the fact that the Bills have kind of owned them the last couple of years. It's the chance for the Jets to get multiple monkeys off their back at the same point in time here. Give me the Jets to win and cover.
I don't know what the Jets have against Buddy Ryan. I know their son's kind of left him high and dry, but
well,
I mean, no reason to take it out of Buddy.
Freudian slip.
I'll be honest with you. You know me. I really want to take the Bills here. It reminds me of the Atlanta-Carolina game last week. You talk about line value. Buffalo was only a 2.5-point dog at the Jets when they played. And, oh, by the way, they won that game. I think Rex might have his team fired up. I would be very trepidatious about laying the Jets. This line was going to be Bills minus 1.5 before the confluence of events that happened last week occurred. So I'd be very leery about laying points here. I'm not recommending Buffalo just because the number is kind of low and, maybe they do mail it in, but I don't think they're going to mail it in. I think this is going to be a very tough game for the Jets that they absolutely can lose.
Very interesting. Yeah, because I don't see them losing the game, but we'll see how it plays out. The next one of my big three, it's the 7-8 Raiders at the 10-5 Chiefs, 4:25 Eastern Time, Arrowhead Stadium in Kansas City. Kevin Burkhart, John Lynch, and the delicious Pam Oliver on the call for Fox. Wait a minute, another AFC game on Fox? What the hell's going on here? This is just freaking me out. But anyways, in looking at this one, Kansas City's laying 7 up from 6.5. I correctly had Kansas City not covering last week, as did you, I believe. And
that was a recommendation for me, yes.
That was, yeah. And I've invoked a couple of different times peak Chiefs, but I think they're due to dump one here, and I think the Raiders can certainly get inside of that. I think people are perceiving a gap between the two teams that's a little bigger than it is at the present point. There is, but let me tell you something. Without the bookend pass rushers here, you saw last week that it allowed the Browns to kind of come back and make a game out of it. I think the bookends are sitting out again this week here. I think, again, you know, with the explosiveness of the Oakland offense, that's where I think the gap between these teams is maybe not as great as this line indicates. Give me the Raiders in this spot. They get inside of it. They could win outright. I don't think they will, but they could.
I don't think this number's inflated. As a matter of fact, Kansas City was actually laying 3 in Oakland when they won earlier this year. So by that standard, the line might be a little low, if anything. I'll be honest with you. We're probably going to disagree with this when we talk about 2016. I'm not going to be as high as most will on the Raiders for next year.
I'm probably going to have one about the 8-8 range, maybe 9-7. But it's a little early for me, too.
I'm thinking 6-10, 7-9.
Okay, then you and I are going to diverge on that. We come to the Sunday night game here. This is my 1,000-star gold-plated lock of the millennium for NFL Week 17 lock picks 7-9 this season. It's the 10-5 Vikings at the 10-5 Packers, 8:30 Eastern Time, Lambeau Field in Green Bay on NBC. Michael Stafoya and Collinsworth on the call, and Green Bay is laying 3 points in this one. I hit this as a lock pick a couple of weeks ago, Green Bay versus Minnesota. Not a surprise, because I've done a breakdown of my success in picking games team by team this year. I'm 11-4 on Vikings games, 11-4 on Packers games this year. Now, a point of a little bit of caution there. I'm also very good on the Giants. I was 10-4. I'm now 11-4 on the Giants, 11-4 on the Vikings, and that was after missing last week's game. I'm looking at it here in terms of the law of averages. What are the odds that I'm going to miss a game with two teams that I have dominated 2 weeks in a row? That's why this is my lock. And why I'm picking the Vikings,
God.
I just look at the trenches here. I look at they can't keep Aaron Rodgers upright. He's struggling to make chicken salad out of chicken shiznit with these awful wide receivers, aside from Cobb, and even Cobb is getting dragged down by all of this. Vikings have everything going for him. So while it's just a lean on the Vikings, it's my lock because as far as I'm concerned, I can't miss on a Vikings Packers game.
Oh my God. You know what? Just because of that awful explanation, I'm going to recommend the Packers. I'm recommending the Packers.
You can't
go
against
me,
Kyle. I'm 22. I'm 22 and effing 8 on picking these two teams this year. I'm 22 and 8,
brother.
Well,
guess what? You're due to regress, and you're going to get a double loss here. So let me tell you something. You picked Green Bay to beat Minnesota, right, earlier this year? That line was like a pick 'em. Green Bay's only laying 3 in Lambeau. Minnesota doesn't beat the good teams on the road. I'm telling you, I'm a little nervous about this. My initial reaction when I saw this line was to jump all over the Packers.
Okay. All right. Well,
it seems like I'm
clear.
They might be all low, but I'm taking the Packers.
You got Green Bay, Seattle, Cleveland, Jacksonville, Miami, and Tampa Bay. I got the Raiders, Jets, and the Vikings as a lock. Thanks, buddy. We'll be back for the wild card next week. Thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge mini episode number 666.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.